This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Terry Dunlap. Terry is principal, partner, CEO, what?
Partner. Managing member.
Managing. Yeah. At Tactical Network Solutions in somewhere in Maryland. Columbia, Maryland.
Columbia.
I've heard of that. you know, it's nice to have a company on the show that's like 10 minutes from my house. I like that. So, Terry, give us a little background.
Let's see. I started the company back in 2007, me and two other partners were all members of the intelligence community. And the company started not really by design, almost by identifying an opportunity when we were government employees in the IC, where we had developed a particular capability, a tool set, a suite of capabilities that got a lot of attention, and other people came to us, came to our agency wanting to share and use it for their particular purposes. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, they didn't want to share the capability that we had developed. So we saw this as a window of opportunity to possibly market to these other agencies that were clamoring for our type of skill set. So I actually left and actually, you know, classic story, started in my basement for about 9 months. I emerged. I had a new capability that we sold to some military units and some other agencies, and that was enough to get me out and get me started and start hiring people. And now we're up to 15 people doing business with multiple intelligence community agencies and the military.
If it's any consolation, 28 years later, I'm still in my basement. but I don't want employees.
Understandable.
Well, you know, I don't manage people. I manage to offend people. So one has to know one's skills, right? So,
exactly.
So what business is your company in?
We like to say that we're in the cyber intelligence business, more specifically offensive cyber operations. That's just a fancy term for computer hackers, if you will. I've been doing this stuff since 1984, 85. So,
do you want to get into that part of it or not?
I mean, we can. We can refer people to a podcast link that is probably more descriptive of my background, because it goes into an hour and a half. But the long story, the short story of the long story is, you know, when I was in high school, at that time in 84, 85, 86, there were no computer laws. So some of the stuff I got into trouble with the law. There really were no laws to really book me against. So I think the only thing that they could stick to me was maybe credit card fraud at the time, because we were one of the original dumpster divers going in, taking out carbons, things of that nature. But, you know, learned my lesson. Back then there was that show on TV, and I think it's out now, called Scared Straight. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those kids that, you know, you parade me in front of the judge and you read me the riot act, and that's it, I'm done.
Not done, redirect.
Exactly. So in light of my skill, you know, a lot of people, when I tell my story at a lot of these, you know, cyber camps and stuff to high school kids and college students and whatnot, they hear about my skills, what I did, and they assume that I was going to college to get a degree in computer science, but that's not the case, even though that's where my, I guess, natural talent or curiosity or abilities were. I was primarily groomed to be a chemical engineer of all things. But by the time I got to college, I didn't like it. And kind of wandered around for about 4.5 years till I finally settled on like poli sci and econ. I did want to get back into computers, but part of my sentencing, if you will, when I was 17 was to stay away from computers for 3 years. And that's pretty much all of my college career. So I stayed away from it. But I got out and meandered through various jobs, primarily in the financial industry, being a financial analyst, broker, you know, things of that nature. And then I finally got hooked up with one of the big six accounting firms and met one of the sysadmin guys there. And we became pretty good friends as I related my hacking stories to him and talked about technology and current trends and stuff like that. And one thing led to another, and I started actually, while he was gone, taking over his sysadmin work. And one time we were talking in depth about some of the hacking stuff, and he goes, well, do you know that our company actually has a group of hackers that go out and red team Fortune 500 companies? I said, you actually get paid to break in places and do the hacking stuff that got me in trouble so many years ago? I go, yeah, let me, you know, make an introduction. And before you know it, I interviewed and I got on to the, I guess at the time it was like their e-commerce security division. So doing a lot of work there, started getting back into the game. And unfortunately, this big, one of the big six, I don't even know if there's six anymore left, but anyway, this particular company decided to focus on long-term implementation projects because it was more profitable as opposed to these little pen testing engagements, penetration mm-hmm. testing engagements, which usually lasted about 2 weeks. So, I mean, from a business point of view, think about it. If you're going to spend all this time, energy, and money to market your company's services, what would you rather secure? A low-paying, two-week engagement or a multi-million dollar, multi-year systems integration project? I mean, it's a no-brainer. So I saw the writing on the wall and decided to start looking around. And I was actually at a security conference in Baltimore, and I think it was right around 2000 timeframe. And just on a whim, we were standing in a Starbucks line, one of those little portable carts in the concourse at the convention center at Baltimore. And I just turned around, saw a woman who had a name tag on it, said DOD. And I just said to her, you know, I'd love to work at the DOD. You guys are probably under constant attack, and it's just a challenging environment to work in. I think that would just be awesome. And that just kicked off a conversation. We started talking, and she said, hey, give me your contact information, and we'll, you know, my boss is always looking for good people. So long story short, over many months, finally get an email. Hey, you're going to get a call from our recruiting office. Okay, great. So I'm at work, and I get this phone call from the recruiter, and he told me that he was with a particular intelligence agency, and I was absolutely stunned because I had no idea that's who she worked for. So they gave me a quick phone interview, said, hey, this is great. We'd like to fly out for an interview. Can you make it? Absolutely. I'm not going to, you know, pass up this opportunity. So the day comes, I'm flying out, and I get a phone call from my wife as I'm en route to the airport. Are you still going to your interview? I said, yeah, why wouldn't I? She goes, you haven't been listening to the radio or seen any TV yet this morning, have you? It was September 11th.
Oh, my God.
I was on my way to the airport. So needless to say, I turned around, and I joined up with the rest of my colleagues at the company, and we watched the carnage unfold on TV. A couple months later, got flight rebooked, went back out there, did the typical round of interviews, talked to everybody, and recruiter at the end says, so how'd it go? And I said, it went pretty well. I said, unfortunately, according to everybody I interviewed with, everybody thought I'd be a good fit for their group, but there are no billets. And I didn't know what billets were at the time. And this recruiter basically said, oh, you don't have to worry about that because I just got this email from the higher up saying that Congress just passed this multi-million dollar, billion dollar bill to fight the war on terror. They're going to get all the money they need. So what I need you to do, Terry, is to take this SF-86, which is your top secret security background paperwork, and fill all that out, get it back to us right away, and we'll get you going into the process and see what happens. Then I stopped him. I said, hey, look, I got to be honest. You know, back in 1985, 86, I got in trouble doing some computer hacking stuff. Is this going to be a problem? And he said, well, have you been doing it recently? I said, well, not recently. I mean, I do have the capacity now that I have a job. I actually set up labs in my basement. I'm hacking my own stuff, but I'm not actively going out hacking people and companies and stuff like that. He says, as long as you're not doing that, everything should be fine. So I went through the process. I mean, you know, it was about a year later, I actually got a phone call from the recruiter, and he said, you know, we got some good news and some bad news. And he said, the good news is you got your top secret clearance. I said, that's great. Well, what could possibly be the bad news? He goes, well, you know, those billets that you interviewed for, they're already filled. Would you mind coming back in and interviewing with some other people? And I said, yeah, sure. So eventually I got in and found a home. It wasn't the initial home that I hoped to be in when I got to this particular agency. But fortunately enough, that for new people like myself at the time, they had a rotating internship. So every 6 months we were switching offices over like the next 3 years. But I eventually found the office that I wanted to be in where we, you know, I met my current partners and we developed the tools that kind of put us on the map, if you will. And that led to the opportunity that led me to start my own company that led me here speaking to you.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Terry Dunlap. Terry is a partner at Tactical Network Solutions. You can find them at TACNETSOL.com, and they have some billets opened. So if you are of the security cleared or clearable hacker persuasion, you might want to look them up. It's a very cool company doing some extraordinarily neat work, and we're not going to get into much of any of that. But suffice to say, their logo tells a great story. It's a key next to a knife. And if you've listened to the show long enough, you know that I collect knives. This is just really cool. But let's say, okay, so you did your time at this agency. You met some really neat people. You know, the cream of the pocket protector crowd.
Yeah,
is your best friends. And I've met one. Actually, I've met two. Tell us how and why you started the business.
It was primarily an opportunity that we discovered when we were at this particular agency. We had developed these capabilities that made our agency extremely successful in some of the missions that they pursued. And a lot of our internal clientele, if you will, happened to be military intelligence type units. So it was really cool to be part of a group of guys that you knew were going out on the pointy edge of the spear on a regular basis, taking your tools and capabilities with them to do their mission. And it seemed it was very, very successful. And that success led to other intelligence community affiliates to say, hey, well, if they're doing this, why can't we do that? Let's go talk and see if we can, you know, share notes and possibly, you know, use their tools and all that kind of stuff. Well, for some reason, there were stipulations with the sharing. There were a lot of roadblocks. I wasn't in the management chain at the time. I was the worker bee. I was the guy.
You're
the
hacker.
My friends. Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting at a bench, and I'm coming up with the tools and techniques, and I try and stay out of the management stuff and leave it to the people that, you know, supposedly know better than I do. So, but when we started getting word that, you know, even our internal customers' requirements and requests were to be not a priority anymore, I mean, we should be focusing on other things. It was like, wow, you know, we have all these other agencies coming to us. We have the military guys who are really interested in this stuff. Who's fulfilling this need? And so I actually went to a particular unit commander, and I asked him. I said, hey, I want to just throw something out there. Just, you know, no commitment or anything on your part, but what if I left, took a couple of the guys with me, started our own company, and built these type of capabilities in an unclassified environment? would you guys be interested in purchasing these from us at all? And I said, here's some ideas that we have on the block, but we just can't do here because we're not allowed to. We're told we can't do this stuff. And on a handshake and a nod, he said, yeah, we know what you guys can do. So, yeah, we would do it. I said, that's all I need. And I went back, put in my two-week notice, and left the end of February in 2007 and sat in my basement March 1st, 2007, staring at a wall with a laptop and a blank screen, thinking, what in the hell am I going to do now? What have I gotten myself into? So... You know, I did most of my work in my basement. Sometimes I'd go to Starbucks and hang out there and do some coding there. So it was all, you know, doing a lot of research, development, prototyping.
You ever reading other people's computers when you're sitting in Starbucks? You don't have to answer
that
if you don't want.
You know, depending on what tool we're developing, you know, some of that information might leak into the tool, but, you know, we get rid of it because, I mean, it's no interest to us.
It's
people that are targets of this country that are.
It's like mind reading, though. I mean, you go in there and you know you have the capability of looking.
Yep. So, you know, 9 months later, I came out and went back to that same unit commander and said, this is the capability, you know, I now have. And, you know, this is how much it costs. Is this something you're interested in buying? And they bought multiple copies of this software program I developed. And that was my first foray into any type of wasn't even a contract at that point. It was a very simple, I guess it was almost like a micro purchase order or whatever it is where they could just simply
credit card.
Do it that way. And that started the ball rolling. And that was enough to get me out into a virtual office and then hire a couple employees. And before you know it, word of mouth started spreading. And if as you know, and if anybody who works in the intelligence community knows, it's all built on trust and relationships. And as you start to build your reputation, it's like, oh, you know, well, Terry's doing, he's out on his own now. He's doing this, that, and the other thing. And we heard, you know, good things about it. So, you know, we're being asked to be put on contracts and be teammates on, you know, some efforts around the intelligence community. So it's a long process. And, you know, it's not fun all the time doing the government contracting gig. I'm sure there are easier ways to make money than as a government contractor.
Not right now.
that might be the case. But I mean that's pretty much the story, and you know, classic, you know, in your basement garage type thing coming out. And like I said, we're up to you know, almost 15 people now, and a lot of people have said, well, you know, you guys have been around for 5 years, you're doing cool stuff. Why aren't you, you know, 100 people? Why haven't you sold out? All this kind of stuff. You know, we're having fun. I mean, we hire these guys who actually, they love to hack. They hack at work. They hack at home. They actually go to the hacker conferences, and they're actually speakers at these places. They're speakers at DEF CON. They're speakers at Black Hat. They're speakers at ShmooCon here in D.C. in the winter. And, you know, this is the stuff that these guys wanted to do at the jobs they used to work at, but their employer wouldn't let them. And this wasn't government employer. This was a commercial employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I am absolutely stunned that these companies did not recognize the skills that these people possessed and allowed them to pursue this stuff, as opposed to, we want you to work on this widget and, you know, I don't care about your reverse engineering or your ability to code exploits or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, without naming other companies, we hear on a fairly regular basis of, you know, financial firms or retail firms getting hacked and credit card data going away to, you know, some former Soviet Republic or China or wherever. Do any of these companies ever approach your company and say, where are the vulnerabilities?
No, they have not approached yet. Well, it depends because... Yeah, I just had a conversation with a guy yesterday who was in town to give a security speech, and he's actually in the commercial space, and he deals with a lot of the higher level, if you will, like application security things, patch management, those types of things. And even your big Fortune 500 companies, the IT departments, are still trying to wrap their head on, you know, patch management, getting stuff out to the to the workforce in a timely manner so they're not vulnerable. So there are a lot of companies out there and consultants that already do this type of security assessments to see if they're vulnerable and whatnot. Mm. Now, we focus on a very specific, very niche area that to date, and maybe after this radio broadcast, this will no longer be the case, but we focus on embedded devices. Okay? Okay. So for those people that don't know, your phone, your iPad, your firewall, your switches, your routers, all this stuff is running with software that is embedded into the system. Mm-hmm. There's no user interaction, there's no keyboard, there's no monitor, but there's software that's running. And this software that's running on these devices is extremely insecure. I'll give you an example of one without naming names. We had discovered a vulnerability in an internet-connected webcam. Now, this particular webcam, we did a search on the internet to see where some of these endpoints, these web cameras.
Hold on to that. Sure. Let's pick up this story on the other side of the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Terry Dunlap of Tactical Network Solutions, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Terry Dunlap. He is partner at Tactical Network Solutions. Sorry to interrupt the story. Go.
No, that's okay. So we identified a vulnerability in a particular brand of an internet-connected web camera. And a lot of these are, you know, you can buy them at Best Buy, but this was like an industrial strength type one. And so we did a quick scan of the internet to see where some of these actually resided. And we were actually looking for these things to pop up in various overseas locations. We actually noticed a large number of them pop up in the U.S. And it's like, this is not good. If there is an attack vector in these cameras, and these cameras are in the U.S., we should probably find out who owns these cameras in case it's something critical. So we started investigating some of these internet-connected cameras and found out that one of them was actually connected to a power plant in a particular state where I had a connection with law enforcement. So I contacted the law enforcement contact in that state, and you know, he knew us, he knew what we did, and I said, look, you guys have an energy company, a power plant there, that has this brand of camera. I don't know how much you know about our reverse engineering and our exploits, but we have a proof of concept where we can actually launch code against that camera and become and gain root access, which is the super user account. Once you, what they call gain root, you can do anything you want. And what ends up happening at that point is once someone were to get root on that camera, then they could begin launching attacks throughout the rest of the infrastructure and take over and do malicious things. So I figured it would be best to have our law enforcement contact get in touch with this power plant as opposed to, you know, Tactical Network Solutions from Columbia, because they're not going to know who the hell we are. And they might not take us seriously, but if we could pass this information along to law enforcement and then they deliver the message, hopefully they'll take it seriously. And they did. And they we got a report back that they actually took down all the cameras and found some better non-vulnerable cameras to install in their place.
Okay. So let me ask a slightly different question about that. How many of the commercially available products, regardless of where they are on the financial or food chain, you know, supposedly very secure down to stuff you stick in your home, how many of them are really secure?
Let me just say that and we're keeping a database on this right now internally. The vast majority of everything that you and I buy off the shelf for home, and these are all names we recognize. We're talking Linksys, Netgear, Belkin, Trendnet, all across the board, the vast majority of them are vulnerable. And the reason that they're vulnerable is because even though you have all these devices, let's take a wireless router, for example. Linksys might have 10, 15 different brands or models of that router, but they all contain, with very slight variations, the same firmware. And it's the same developers that are creating the same firmware. So the vulnerabilities proliferate across the product line. And I'm actually kind of shocked that when we actually talk about these things at like Black Hat and DEF CON, like we did this past year, But the vendors don't even call us. They don't even ask us, you know, hey, can you help us out? Can you review the code and make it more secure? Can you tell us where the vulnerabilities are so we can go back to our developers? Nothing. We actually did get a call actually from the Wi-Fi Alliance when we found a vulnerability in the WPS, which is the Wi-Fi protected setup, which is mandated by the Wi-Fi Alliance to, if you want to be compatible with other wireless devices and manufacturers and get that black and white Wi-Fi seal of approval on your box to go on the shelf, you have to have this protocol, this WPS, Wi-Fi protected setup, enabled by default. And we were able to come up with a way to actually crack that and be able to... Crack the WPS, yes. It's nothing but an 8-pin key. And once you have that, the encryption or the security under that is WPA2, which is where you type in your passphrase or whatever to secure your devices. Once we crack that pin, the wireless access point basically says, oh, here's your passphrase, and gives it to you in the clear. So when this became public late last year, early January, the Wi-Fi Alliance actually called our developer and said, you know, is there anything we can do to fix this? And it's, yeah, you need to change the entire protocol, the entire specification that was approved by this governing body called the IEEE, which I think is the Institute for Electrical something engineers.
Yeah.
So short of rewriting that specification and telling manufacturers now you need to implement it this way, everything that's been out since about 2007, 2008, and has WPS enabled by default is vulnerable to this attack. So that just goes to show you the depth and breadth of how insecure the SOHO stuff is, the small office, home office stuff that we buy on a regular basis through Amazon or any of the other stores that are out there. Now, we have been focusing on some of the higher-end enterprise stuff, and this is actually kind of cutting edge right now. Last week, our developers have discovered a company that sells VPN appliances that you buy and stick in your, you know, IT room so your employees can remotely log in from the road over a secure connection. And some of their cameras, we have found, and we're still investigating this, we have found backdoor accounts that have been established with hard-coded passwords. Now, we don't know why they're there. We don't know if they were maybe mistakenly left in and forgot to have been taken out.
Mistakenly left in, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know.
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility. It's from a foreign country.
I'm shocked.
No, I'm not shocked. It is from a country that may have some backing from another country that would kind of make sense why this was there. So it's very early on. We're still investigating it, and we're actually scanning the internet now looking for U.S.-based companies that might have these appliances as part of their network infrastructure. And if we, you know, once we make a final determination, we'll probably get in touch with law enforcement to let them know that, hey, you know, here's what we found. Let us show you. Let us demonstrate it. And then here are the U.S. companies that we think are critical that have this, you know, in their system. They probably should be notified.
Quickly.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
This stuff gets scary.
It is. It is.
You know, when we figure the reliance we have on everything electronic now, it's just utterly, completely scary. One of the main reason you're on this show, I saw you speak. We've only known each other about 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
But I saw you speak at the Base Business Initiative. I'm on the advisory committee for that in Howard County, and we both belong to the Howard County Tech
Council.
Yep. Council.
Yep.
But you didn't speak there. You spoke at BBI. Number one, great speech. it didn't come across as a speech. Came across as like, you know, a barroom chat. Not that I hang out in bars anymore, but you know, it was just very cool. But you have a very distinct way of talking about how you do business, And I'd wager that somewhere in your not distant background, you've had a fair amount of Sun Tzu reading.
I do have a copy of it. Yeah, I think okay. I may have read it once or twice.
There you go. I have four different translations, but not that I study it that frequently. Just, you know, four or five times a year. You start off the presentation with what your arsenal is, and,
right.
and for you, the arsenal is how do you differentiate your company?
Exactly.
So, and your mission statement, as it were, is very cool.
So. Yeah, one thing that I noticed with a lot of these technology networking events, particularly sponsored through the HTC, and I've been to some other ones in like the Chesapeake Regional Tech Council and stuff. And, you know, when you introduce yourself and people start chatting, you inevitably you get to, what do you do? And what do you do? And a lot of these people, in the region where we live and play, everyone's trying to do business at Fort Meade. And, everyone says, well, I'm a systems integrator. We have developers, lifecycle integration. I mean, this whole very generic, very broad, very I can do everything type mentality. And it doesn't surprise me. And then they ask, well, what do you guys do? And then I say, we're offensive cyber operators with a focus on wireless devices, routers, and switches. And basically, we target anything with embedded firmware. I mean, and people are kind of stunned because they've never heard anything like that before.
Deer in headlights,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. And, it's cyber intelligence. And you're into, when I say cyber, a lot of people immediately think, oh, you're into securing stuff. It's like, no, we don't secure anything. In fact, we're the opposite of that. We look for ways to get in. And, I like those odds much better than anybody who's in, information assurance, because if you're protecting stuff, you have to be right 100% of the time. In our case, we have to be right just once, and I like those odds much better, because it's easier for us to find the needle in the haystack than it is to go out there and protect everything.
You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'll be back with Terry after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Terry Dunlap, Terry's partner with Tactical Network Solutions. You can find them at tacnetsol.com, tacnetsol.com. And if you are a hacker and you are clearable, take a look. They hire some extremely talented people, and they're extremely particular about who they bring in. So look at the website first, looking for vulnerabilities in firmware. So I want people to get a kind of a feel for what I saw in your presentation.
Okay.
So give us the highlights.
Okay.
and how you approach it. Prepping the field is number two after your arsenal.
Yeah, let me actually just step back a minute and actually talk about the title of the talk.
Yes.
Because the BBI asked me to come in, hey, can you talk about some of your war stories about doing business with the intelligence community, and obviously being in Howard County, specifically at Fort Meade. So I entitled the talk, The Battle for Business Targeting Fort Meade and Beyond. And so I try to keep it in, kind of a light military type terms that, mm-hmm. Might be a little different than what, the people at BBI are used to seeing in terms of presentation. So, the first thing I talk about is basically, your arsenal, which is your niche. What is your niche? What makes you special? Why do I want to do business with you and not the guy next door to you? And the thing that some people might not like this, but, I don't care if you're some kind of special checkbox. If you're an 8A, you're a minority, you're, service disabled veteran owned, Alaskan native, that will get you so far. But it's going to be your talent and your skills.
Doesn't open the door.
Right. I mean, it might. I mean, but I don't know. I mean, I don't have any of those special check boxes, so I can't speak from experience. But I do see a lot of these people at these networking events that come to us.
Hey, not too many people got arrested in high school.
So, these people come to us and they ask, how do you do it? How do you get business at the fort? And they have all the special check boxes. So, I mean, they're still struggling to get in the front door at the fort. But if you have something unique, something that they need that stands out, and you get in front of the right people, that's going to carry more than whatever, you know, special status is that you are.
Right.
So I talk about the arsenal, which is your niche. Make sure you can hone that and make sure you differentiate yourself. So if you're a systems integrator, there's got to be something special about you that makes you different from all the other systems and integrators out there. Find that, whatever that is, hone in on it. That's your message. That's how you do the lead-in with your introductions. So now that you know what your arsenal is, I talk about, you know, prepping the battlefield, if you will. And now a lot of people that want to deal with the Ford and the NSA, they have a hard time getting in, especially if they're new to the intelligence community. But fortunately, the agency had set up a PISA program, which stands for Provisional Industrial Security Approval. So to get into that program, the stumbling block happens to be, you know, getting in front of someone who is a technical director or higher in the food chain to actually sponsor you. Okay. So if you're fortunate enough to go to some of these networking events and see somebody from the Fort who happens to be a technical director or higher, and they do show up periodically, you need to, you know, impress upon them what makes you different, and then get them to go back inside and write a, you know, justification as why they think, you know, the Fort could benefit from your services. Now, the thing that I tell people, and I've told the people in various feedback forums at PISA at the Fort, that they need to do a better job of educating these tech directors and higher, that just because you sponsor somebody for the PISA program is not obligating the agency to do business with you or to purchase anything you're offering.
Right.
It's just that, hey, we think there might be a potential opportunity here. And once you get past that hurdle, then the PISA office issues a memorandum of understanding that's good for 3 years, and it gives you like 3 slots for key management personnel to get cleared, come into the fort, do business on visitor badges, mm-hmm. and they give you, I think, 2 rotating slots. So eventually, if you do get on a contract, you can start clearing, you know, a couple people until they get on a permanent contract, whether it's, you know, as a prime or as a sub, and then they move off that CPRL, that contractor position roster log. So it's the vehicle that a lot of people at the Fort are, you know, clamoring to get on, and their stumbling block is the tech recommendation. And the moral of the story is, if you have an opportunity to talk to these people face to face, if PISA hasn't educated them, then you need to educate these people and tell them, hey, by sponsoring me, you are not obligating this agency to do anything with me. Mm. I just need you to help me get in the door if you think I have something of value. So after prepping the field, we have to do a little bit of reconnaissance. And this is where you actually find where these people are and talk to the primes that are out there. Networking events. A lot of people are using networking events, of course, to get networking and contacts and things of that nature. But I have to say, and like I said in the talk, that with the Howard County Tech Council, when I started Tactical Network Solutions and we were going to these, the Tech Council actually had a number of subgroups, or what they called affinity groups, and back in the day it was the intelligence affinity group that, you know, we were part of.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were there, there were people there. There were business development people from Booz, SAIC, L3. I mean, I could go on, but the big guys
yeah.
were there, yeah. And so, you know, we would go around the room, and all the companies that were represented would talk about, you know, who they are, what they did, what they offered. And, you know, of course, we'd say offensive cyber capabilities, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, sooner or later, the dialogue starts to open. Oh, well, if you guys do this type of work, then I need to put you in touch with this VP of business development in my company. It's a slow process. Anybody who's in this business knows this is a slow, long, drawn-out process. You're not going to walk out of that meeting after talking with these people and have some type of contractual deal. It's just not going to happen. But if it wasn't for going to the Howard County Tech Council's intelligence affinity group, we probably would not be in the studio talking to you today, or at the level where we are right now.
Mm.
Because once we actually were able to get in front of some of these primes and show how we were different from everybody else and what need our niche filled and how it could help them even secure more business or, you know, help the mission, you know, we started being asked to be on teams as additional RFPs came out from the different agencies around the community. So the networking at you know, some of these events is critical. Exhibitions, being able to set up a table inside these agencies when they have certain industry days and stuff, and be able to go out there and just present your wares is valuable. I didn't like it at first. My business partner said, we need to do this. We need to spend the $1,500 to set up a table and go take our stuff. Now, doing exploit development, the only thing we actually had were like spec sheets that we could lay on the table that said, you know, here, this device is vulnerable to this attack, and talks about, you know, how it's done and whatnot. But, you know, we go to these exhibitions and we look at all the other, you know, 50, 60, 70 vendors around us, and they're all the high powered people that, you know, they
giant
got the giant
booze
displays. And here we are with a table with our, you know, banner draped across the front and, you know, some handouts on the table. Nothing too impressive. But when I did a quick walk around the actual area, I saw three, maybe out of the 60 or 70 companies, three companies that were actually in the offensive space. And all three of us focused on different offensive type of things. So we weren't treading on each other's territory.
Cool.
And so one of the things I noticed was a lot of people that would come around and talk really weren't interested. They were more interested in taking your swag off the table. Thankfully, we didn't have any. But we knew who the players were, because we noticed three criteria when we left. One, all three of them had gray hair. So they were people that were older, sophisticated, knew what was going on.
Right.
They talked to us longer than 20 minutes, and they all wore suits.
There you go.
So those were the three people.
The three check
and,
boxes.
You know, sooner or later, good things happened.
Okay. Terry, this is going to end the live portion. If you've been listening to AmTower Off Center the last couple of weeks, you'll know that the rest of this interview is going to be available on the web, federalnewsradio.com. Click on shows, look for AmTower Off Center. The rest of this interview will be there. Terry and I are not done. We've got probably another 15 or 20 minutes to go. So thank you for listening to the live broadcast. And Terry, thanks for coming in. TACnetSol.com. Check it out. And once again, thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center, the live portion. Pick it up on the web.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Terry, we're back. Continue, please.
So yeah, so part of the reconnaissance portion of you know, doing business at the Ford and beyond is, you know, getting involved with some of these very highly specific, highly focused networking groups. There are some out there that just haven't paid off in terms of money in the door, but they're very, very good at collecting intelligence in terms of what's happening, what's coming out. Who the players are, who's chasing what contracts. I know, speaking from experience here in Maryland, the Maryland marketing meeting is usually very good. And FCIA is huge.
FCIA Central
FCIA
Maryland.
Is massive.
Yeah.
So it's, those are good. I mean, we made a lot of connections there. The other thing I advise people to do, or suggest that people do, in addition to the networking and the exhibitions at some of these, you know, intelligence community industry days, is public speaking. I think, as I mentioned when I was there, I couldn't stand public speaking when I started this business. I didn't feel comfortable. You get the jitters. You just, you know, you fumble around. But I've noticed as I've gotten more comfortable doing this and getting out there and not only talking just about our business, but talking about how to be, you know, a small business government contractor in general, and some of the pitfalls and stuff that we come across, has opened up a whole new world of connections and opportunities. And I mean, like, for example, being here today. I mean, that was all because of, you know, you seeing me talk at the BBI. So public speaking, networking, highly focused networking groups, and actually doing some of the exhibitions are great ways to get known, get out there, establish your brand, if you will, become the expert in whatever it is that you do. That's why it's very important to identify your niche, because you can't be everything to everybody. I don't know if I relayed this story at the BBI or not, but we actually got called from a large government contractor who knew of our capabilities here, but told one of their counterparts down in Virginia, mm-hmm. and said, hey, you might want to bring these guys on for XYZ opportunity you're pursuing. Long story short, we had a number of phone conversations about our capabilities, how it would fit in, blah, blah, blah. And then finally at the very end, I said, look, you know, I don't think our company's going to be able to play and be a benefit to you on this particular contract. We probably wouldn't be a great addition to your team right now. They were stunned. I mean, this is a large contractor, and they said, we're in shock because you're basically telling us that you can't do everything. It's like, yeah, that's true. I mean, we have a very focused niche on what we do, and I'm not going to be on the team and say that we can do these things knowing that we can't deliver. But if this particular, you know, if offensive cyber operations or cyber intelligence is in the statement of work, well, then by all means, give us a call back, and we'll be happy to join the team. But by what you're telling me right now, there's really, we can do that, but we'd rather not do. We'd rather focus on our niche. And they said, hey, that's the first time I think we've ever had somebody on here say, you know, we can't do something, because everybody says that they can do everything,
sure.
pretty much, just for the business. And yeah. it's, you know, we don't want to play that game. So after doing the reconnaissance and you know, doing the public speaking and the exhibitions and networking, now it's time to actually exercise what you claim that you can do. And we kind of stumbled into this. This wasn't some big grand master plan that we had set up. But one of our guys, who's very skilled at reverse engineering this embedded firmware, said, hey, I have an idea for a class. Why don't I put together a two-day class? We'll provide all the equipment, all the capabilities and tools and whatnot. We'll have people come in for 2 days, and I'll teach them how to do what we do. Now, most companies would probably look at that and say, you know, that's probably a bad business decision if you're going to give away, you know, the keys to the farm. Well, we decided to take the risk, and back in May, we launched a two-day class called Introduction to Embedded Device Exploitation. And we publicly announced it. It's open to the public.
Exciting title.
Yes. It's
but
it's,
for a very niche audience,
exactly.
It is an exciting
exactly.
title.
So we've run this class every month since May, and every month that we run it, we sell out. We usually have between 15 and 20 seats, depending on, you know, what venue we hold this in.
Mm-hmm.
And we sell out every time, and it's starting to spread by word of mouth, and it's gotten popular enough now that we've actually had two agencies contact us and request a special on-site in-house only edition of it. So
we won't name the agencies.
Right. So we've done that, and we're actually working on an advanced version of that class. So it was a way for us to actually once again solidify our position as, yes, we are the subject matter experts in this particular area. So to us, it was low cost to put a class together. I mean, the guys that are doing the reverse engineering, they're not specifically on any particular contract. We actually have them slated to do, you know, research and development to find these things for our customers. So it's like, well, you know, why don't you take a break from doing your, you know, research and development? Yeah, go ahead. Let's develop the class and see what happens. It's been very successful. So what I would suggest is, you know, if it's low cost or no cost to you to maybe conduct a workshop, a seminar or talk, or even, you know, like us, a two-day class, to bring potential clients and existing clients in to show them, hey, this is who we are, this is what we do, I think it's very effective. So far, it's been extremely effective for us. Now, if you're into janitorial supplies or something like that, I don't know what you could do. Maybe you could, you know, compare cleaning supplies and have like a cleaning cook-off or something where, you know,
well,
you can...
There was a guy who was paying his way through graduate school by cleaning windows. He was a window washer, right? So he started making instructional videos on how he did it because his customers were really thrilled. Nobody ever cleaned their windows that well. So not only did he do an instructional video, he put together packages of material and he sold them on the web.
There you go.
So, I mean, there you go.
Now, if I saw that, I would say, wow, that guy knows his stuff. I mean, he's got the videos, he's got the kits, I mean, the whole nine yards. So that's that to me. Yeah, that guy's probably an expert in his field if that's, you know, he's going to that extent to do that. So it's low cost for us. It may be low cost for you to develop something like that, workshop, half-day seminar. And it's no risk to your customer. Or if you charge for admission, it's low cost, and they get to actually, see what you do.
Yeah.
And solidify yourself as the subject matter expert.
And it did.
Yep.
Because I know at least one of the clients who has the in-house.
So, as part of that battle exercise that I talk about, you're demonstrating your niche. We just talked about the outcomes that are a result of that. You basically enhance your status or credibility as a subject matter expert in whatever it is that you do. And the biggest thing that we've noticed is word of mouth. I mean, we're getting our distribution when we actually open up class. I mean, I only have like about 1,000 email addresses that of people that I know would be interested in this stuff that I've collected. And most of those are in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. So these are actually getting forwarded to friends and relatives and colleagues across the country, because the last couple classes we've had people actually fly in from out west to take this class, which I never imagined would happen.
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind the first time that happens. It's
so
cool.
It's all word of mouth. And also for us, it's also a recruitment vehicle, because we know that the people that, one, we're looking for are hard to find. If you're going to show up at the class and you show aptitude for it, I mean, that's gold to us. And we usually end up, talking to these people and find out that, they work for XYZ company. They're not really thrilled. I was hoping to do more of this work, but I'm not. So now we're starting to collect, an emailing list, if you will, of potential people that we might be able to say, hey, if you're unhappy with your job, why don't you come talk to us? If you're not being, doing the work that you want to do, maybe we can offer that. Maybe not.
How many people actually get to do what they really want to do?
Well, that's true.
It's one of the benefits of working
for
yourself.
Well, I can tell you, I got 15 of them that are doing what they want to do.
There you go.
So once you've practiced your exercise and demonstrating your niche and solidifying your expertise, then the next thing is to what I would say, go to battle. Now you're actually trying to create opportunities. Now, this may be easier for some than others, so it may not be applicable to all. But fortunately, for some of the contracts that we are on, with our reputation growing and people knowing who we are and what we do, it's becoming easier for us to find internal opportunities where opportunities weren't currently present. Hey, I see you have a problem. We might be able to solve that. Here's roughly how we think we would solve it. Oh, hey, that's great. We'd love to have, a couple of your guys in here on contract to do this. Okay, well, what contract vehicles do you have? So we start the investigation process to see what prime contracts exist that we could possibly come in on as a sub. So what we end up doing is, once we find out that there's money, a position, and a need, we will actually go to a large prime contractor who runs that particular contract, and we may not be on that team, say, hey, look, our mutual customer has this need. They have this particular desire. We have this solution that they're looking for, and they have money to back it up. Can we come to some type of mutual agreement here that if you bring us on, we bring the work and the money, and everything's easy for you guys? And so far that's been a plan or a strategy for us that works.
We'll talk off air. There's another vehicle you need to leverage.
Okay. The flip side of that is, now that this prime has done you a favor and brought you on to be a team member to, go after this particular type of work that maybe only you can provide, they're going to ask you to be team members on contracts that may not be in your wheelhouse. So you're going to have to suck it up, and you're going to have to play along, because I think that's how the game should be played. I mean, they've done you a solid, now it's time to do them a solid.
I've been window dressing before.
So, you know, that's you know, developing these opportunities on the inside and then going around shopping for a prime to bring you on to actually realize the opportunity. Just be aware that, you know, they're going to reach out to you to be, you know, team member on some contracts that might not be your niche, that might not be your sweet spot. And you're going to have to spend some time on you know, attending some of the, you know, maybe you have to go in and write for part of the tech volume or the management volume, or you're going to have to spend a lot of time developing rates and stuff. It's all part of the game, but
right.
I mean, in the end, you're...
It's the relationship.
Exactly.
And it's key.
Yep. So, you know, in the end, for us at least, it's gotten us on a bunch of subcontracts. We're also landed a couple sole source contracts out of the deal. And, you know, one thing that I urge a lot of these people to do when I'm talking to them in these networking events is look beyond the fort, because dealing with the fort is extremely difficult. But if you can deal with some of the other agencies, I mean, there's tons of them around here, they're a lot easier to deal with. So don't focus and put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, we've learned this lesson over 5 years, we've been slowly trying to diversify away so we're not so fort dependent and try to move into other areas. And so far, again, it's a slow process, mm-hmm. but it's been successful. And it's by using the same type of strategy that I've laid out here and that I talk about that I think will work for at least a lot of the technical companies that want to differentiate themselves and have a niche that they can exploit.
Do you want to mention Reverb Pro?
Yeah, we can.
We just did.
Yeah, okay.
So tell people what it is.
All right. Reverb Pro is our one and only commercial product, if you will. It was a product. There was no intent ever for this to be a commercial product. We had talked about it earlier in the broadcast about Wi-Fi protected setup being mm-hmm. being vulnerable to attack. And we had developed some computer code that, if you're familiar with computer terminology, that this particular code only worked on the command line. There's no GUI, there's no point and click buttons. It was all, everything you wanted to do, you had to type. So once this particular vulnerability became known this past December, this early January, we wanted to actually corner the market as the subject matter experts on this particular attack vector, this vulnerability. To kind of back up, we were keeping this close to the vest for well over a year, and all this is now public in, you know, internet blogs and in press and all that kind of stuff. But we had perfected this vulnerability for a year, and we were trying to market it to the IC, the people that we thought could actually utilize this in a meaningful way. But during the time that we were trying to get our marketing machine off the ground and get the meetings and get the right players in the room at the right time, unbeknownst to us, there is a college student in Austria.
Another hacker.
Yep. Who is, as part of his college curriculum or whatever, was doing this on his own and discovered the same vulnerability that we had discovered well over a year ago and were perfecting. So he notifies US CERT, hey, there's this vulnerability in Wi-Fi protected setup, and he does the right thing, notifies US CERT. US CERT notifies the vendors, hey, you know, puts out a release to the public that, you know, your wireless access points might be vulnerable to the attack. And then he says, in a few days, I'm going to release my source code to show people a proof of concept that, you know, anybody can download and try it against their own access point at home to see if they're vulnerable to it. Well, once we saw that, we decided, well, we can't let the college student take all the credit for this because, you know, we knew about this for a long time. So let's go ahead and take our code that we have and let's release it open source on Google Code, let anybody download it that wants to have a crack at it. So a couple days later, while we're doing the whole internet press junket and doing interviews and things of that nature, the original college student in Austria posted on his blog, hey, by the way, I'm not even going to release my tool, or maybe he did release his tool. Bottom line is, he actually endorsed our tool, said it was far superior than anything he had ever done, and completely backed our open source tool. So now that's out there free, anybody can download it. And in fact, the kind of the funny part of the story is, you know, as we were trying to sell this to the intelligence community before it was publicly known, you know, nobody was interested in paying the price that we were asking, so maybe it was a little too high, who knows. But in the end, now that it's open source, we know that it's being incorporated into various tools throughout the intelligence community because now it's free. So anybody can buy it. So, but Reaver Pro, so we decided, okay, how can we make money on this? Because, you know, we spent a lot of time, invest a lot of energy in developing this. So we knew that there were a lot of penetration testers out there, security people who, you know, conduct audits, and probably even people in IT departments that want to check their own infrastructure in their companies and whatnot to make sure they're not vulnerable. Well, sure, it's free. You download the open source code, but then you have to compile it. You have to understand all the command line switches. And a lot of people, that's not the world they live in. So we said, well, why don't we create a, you know, push button, an easy button type version, and sell that through, you know, a third-party website that sells other hacker-type tools, and let's sell it for $100. So we did. We developed an interface to the open source tool that when it fires up, it actually is just a big, giant play button. You click the play button. It looks around your immediate environment, shows you all the wireless access points that are in the area, color codes them based on which ones have this WPS feature enabled, which ones don't. And if you click on one that has WPS enabled, the attack starts. Now, the attack is not quick. It takes anywhere from 6 to 10 hours. It's a very slow, brute force type of process, since we're dealing with you know, an 8-digit PIN number, and we can get into the mechanics of how it's actually split in half and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, it takes a while. Now, you know, maybe you can't stick around for 6 to 10 hours to wait for the result. So we have a TiVo-like feature where you can pause the attack, close down your computer, come back the next day, next week, next month, pick up where you left off. And then at the end, if your wireless access point does have WPS and if it is vulnerable to the attack, at the end of, you know, 6 to 10 hours, it's going to basically say, oh, by the way, here's your WPA passphrase that you've, you know, secured all your devices with.
Cool. Very cool. Terry, one final point. Howard County Tech Council.
Yes.
Value.
Well, for us, it was extremely valuable. Like I said, if it wasn't for the Tech Council and their, you know, intelligence affinity group, I don't think we'd have the connections that we have now. It was very, very useful for us. And I think there was maybe one or two times that we attended and walked away with nothing. But every time we went there, outside those two times, we walked away with a valuable contact, somebody that introduced us to somebody else, somebody that brought us on as a sub for whatever. I mean, to me, it was extremely, extremely valuable. Now, the Howard County Tech Council Intelligence Affinity Group doesn't exist anymore. There's been a remake of the Howard County Tech Council, and they're just now launching these brand new subgroups, if you will. And the one that I'm going to be involved with, and I apologize, I don't remember what it expands out to, but it's appropriate. The subgroup is called Hack It. It's going to be cybersecurity, anything that deals with, you know, government contractors and cybersecurity and trying to do business at the fort and stuff like that. So it's undergone a revamp and an image change, and we're starting that up. And I believe the first meeting is like Thursday, September 20th. Around 4:30. Don't quote me on that. Check Howard County Tech Council's website. I'm sure the specifics will be there.
Cool. Pleasure having you on.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Terry Dunlap, Tactical Network Solutions, TACNETSOL.com. Check it out. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.